This episode of the Antlers and Hicks podcast is brought to you by Bloodline Custom Calls. I've been a fan of Bloodline Custom Calls for several years now. I've gotten in touch and gotten a good friendship with Jason Cooper and the boys over at Bloodline, and they make some of the best turkey calls I've heard. They also have some outstanding merchandise, so go check them out. BloodlineCustomCalls.com, Facebook, and Instagram. Check out Bloodline Custom Calls. I'm telling you, you won't be disappointed. In this episode of the Antlers and Hicks podcast, we're talking everything CWD, chronic wasting disease. If you hunted in North Louisiana or South Arkansas last year, you got a very quick education on this deadly disease that deer can carry. Got a feeding ban, fuzzed everybody up. Fast forward a couple months later, and the Area 1 on the east side of the state actually had a case. First confirmed case in Louisiana. Now there's a feeding ban there, and it doesn't look like there's any end to that feeding ban in sight. So I got with Jonathan Bordelon. I'm like, Jonathan, hey man, give me a quick and dirty on chronic wasting disease. He answered every question I could throw at him. Really good information. I'm fired up about it. You guys need to listen. Forward it to all your friends. Get the word out. This is one of them they've got to listen to. If you're a deer hunter in North Louisiana, if you're not going to listen to another episode I do, make sure it's this one. Here we go. Chronic wasting disease. It's a big topic in the state right now. If you hunted deer in North Louisiana last year, I'm sure you've heard of it or may have even been a part of it. And so I wanted to get with somebody who knows a little something about it, so I got with Jonathan Bordelon with the state of Louisiana. How you doing, Jonathan?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Greg.
Yeah, no problem, man. You know, there's a lot of information I think that, you know, the hunters in Louisiana need to get out in front of them. And I think you're the guy to help me out and get that doing. That's what I want to do with this podcast, just kind of bring out some information. So, you know, first off, what is chronic wasting disease?
Well, chronic wasting disease is a neurological disease. It's characterized as a transmissible spongiform encephalopathy, which is basically just a fancy way of saying it's a transmissible disease that causes holes to form in the brain of an animal. And of course, CWD being a neurological disease that does cause impairment to the brain, it is 100% fatal. So that is one thing that separates it from many of the other diseases that deer encounter in any given year.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. I grew up, man, my old man and my grandfather and everybody always talked about blue tongue. Is it the same as blue tongue?
Not at all. Blue tongue is actually a viral disease. It's endemic to the southeastern United States. In general, most of Louisiana's deer herd is exposed to blue tongue on any given year. However, due to the resistance to the disease, most hunters are unaware that the herd has actually been infected simply because symptoms are either mild or non-existent. Of course, with each year, we do receive some mortality from hemorrhagic diseases, which include blue tongue, and those are often reported to us. But in general, they're relatively minor and light as far as mortality. But the key difference here is one disease is 100% fatal. The other definitely is not. One disease in the case of blue tongue being viral, and in the case of chronic wasting disease, it's basically a neurological disease that's not triggered by virus nor a bacteria. It's actually caused by the misfolding or abnormally folded proteins, which are known as prions. So it's its own family of disease.
Now, we talked about it being transmissible. You know, one of my questions is, is it always transmissible? Meaning if a deer comes into contact with another deer with chronic wasting disease, is it a given that deer now is going to develop chronic wasting disease? Do we know that information yet?
Well, we don't know exactly whether or not just basic contact. Obviously, the disease is shed, and it's shed through saliva, through urine, even through feces. So with grooming, eating after one another, all of those things where close contact is required would certainly be routes at which the disease could be transmitted. In addition, this disease behaves a little differently in the fact that it can actually be transmitted into the environment, and then the environment could become a source of infection. And it's a couple of different pathways with that. So you can have a deer that is visiting a feed site, let's say, repetitively, and so it's leaving saliva behind, possibly even urinating near that site. Other deer are coming to that site, foraging in that same footprint, and they could actually take up some of those prions that are actually shed by that deer through both urine and saliva. And those prions are actually bindings to salt particles, and they'll actually persist in the environment for years. So if those sites, are visited by a lot of animals over a long period of time and any of those animals are positive, then certainly not necessarily the animal-to-animal contact, but just other animals coming in contact with a contaminated environment could become infected. And the other way is basically if you would have a animal that was positive for chronic wasting disease and that animal perished, it's going to decompose on the landscape, at which time all of the infectious material that is in that animal and concentrated in the central nervous system is going to bind in the environment, meaning that decomposed material eventually will disappear, but those prions will persist, and they'll actually bind to salt particles. And there's evidence that it is even taken up by plants. So that site, and it can potentially be a new focal point for a new infection if a deer comes along, even if it's years after, foraging on that same footprint, would have the potential to ingest infectious material that could lead to infection. As far as deer just close to one another, foraging in the same forest, but not necessarily coming in direct contact, not coming in contact with saliva, not coming in direct contact with the infectious material, certainly just being in the proximity of another positive animal does not mean that another deer will become positive. It does not appear that it's that easily transmitted, but it does require animals to come in contact with infectious material, primarily saliva. That's why foraging and feeding and even grooming would be, likely methods at which you would have some transmission due to, animal-to-animal contact through those fluids.
So what I'm hearing, and I'm sure it's a twofold, number one, the state can control baiting, whether we can or whether we can't. But it's also, what I'm hearing is it's a little less likely they would get it with through natural browse than through a bait site. Is that kind of what we're thinking?
Yeah, here? And that's obviously a concern is anytime you put bait out, you're artificially congregating deer. That's one of the primary reasons bait is used. It's used to attract. And with that attraction, you're attracting artificially at least multiple animals to the same footprint. And with this disease and how it works, you certainly would increase the risk and increase or amplify the rate of transmission from animal to animal. So certainly animals spaced out, obviously herds that are at lower densities, the transmission rates would be much lower. Herds at higher densities would be higher. And then if you're supplementally feeding, then that'll actually just amplify transmission. So certainly, feeding is a concern. It's one of the few tools as far as the prohibition of that you have in order to slow potential spread down. Without it being mitigated, it would have the potential to spread more rapidly. And with a higher percentage of animals positive on the landscape, that environmental contamination that we talked about increases. In addition to, you have an increased chance of that area that's infected growing just due to dispersing animals. So the higher the rate of positives, the greater the dispersal, the higher the densities, all those things would feed into both the expansion of the disease as far as its footprint, as well as the percentage of animals that would become positive in any given area.
Okay. So, last year we had a case relatively close to Louisiana, coming out of Felsenthal National Wildlife Refuge in South Arkansas. And some of North Louisiana was taken in that I guess you'd call the I don't know if it was an emergency area or what you would call it. And one of the big questions everybody had, okay, well, we can't bait. We can't put out corn. We can't put out rice bran. What about food plots? How do food plots play into chronic wasting disease?
Well, food plots are allowed. The focus of that prohibition was limited to the placement of bait that would attract deer. So the placement of grain or any other lure that would attract deer. So food plots would still be allowed. Obviously, with best management practices, you know, larger food plots would be better than smaller food plots. But at the same time, there are no regulations in reference to food plots themselves. And that discovery in Felsenthal was an animal detected by Arkansas Game and Fish just 7 miles north of Louisiana. In response to that, the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries in Louisiana collected 340 samples with the cooperation of hunters and processors and taxidermists across Morehouse and Union parishes. And with that, there were no detections. In addition to that, Arkansas also did a fair bit of surveillance in the county of Union. So actually, Union County, Arkansas, is adjacent to Union Parish, Louisiana. So in Union County, they did, and the adjoining counties, they did some surveillance in response to that detection without detecting any additional positives. So that is good news in the fact that the disease, at least at this point, is very difficult to detect, and it has not been detected in Louisiana. So that is obviously where mitigation measures would be most effective when the disease is difficult to detect or find. In the case of high prevalence rates, if every other deer is positive for the disease, most of the mitigation tools that we have really would not be effective due to the just the sheer number of positives and the amount of environmental contamination. So it's one of those things that you hope to not find it, but if you do, you would rather find it in its earliest stage because you can do some things that could hopefully keep the disease in a very low prevalence, which in turn would minimize the impacts to the herd.
Now, I agree with you. I work in South Arkansas. I work in Union County, and there were drop boxes almost at every gas station that I could see. There were several areas where there were drop boxes. You know, hunters could save their heads, drop them in a cooler, and Game and Fish came by and we would pick them up and test them. And now Arkansas has had chronic wasting disease, if I'm not mistaken, in the past, but it was in the northern part of the state. So this is, I don't believe that this may be the first one they've had this far south. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. That's what I believe.
Yeah, that's correct. They had detected the disease back in 2015, and the infected counties have primarily been in northwest Arkansas, and some of those counties have very high prevalence rates. But you know, it seemed like the distribution was in that portion of their state. So this is actually, far removed from where they have had any previous positives. So pretty alarming to them, because while they expected to likely find more positives in northwest Arkansas, this one threw them, this one was a huge surprise simply because it was so far removed. And certainly concerning for us, not knowing where the origin or additional positive animals could be found. So, the immediate response is to look, obviously in the counties or parishes in which you would find a positive, but in addition to ramp up your surveillance and those adjacent to it, not knowing if maybe you have just found the edge of something that is concentrated, just a county or two away in the case of what was discovered in Arkansas. So that's going to be the challenge and task for the upcoming season, to try to determine whether or not it's just it's an isolated event where there's actually a new positive for some reason that's popped up in a new part of a state, but not necessarily tied to a bigger infection that is close by. And hopefully with increased surveillance in both states this season, we'll be able to have a better or at least more confidence in answering that question.
Now, let's that happened in, I think you and I talked, you know, just I called you up one day and it was just after the Thanksgiving hunt. And that's always, that would have been a prime time to get 500 heads in so we could get them tested and everybody could go back to hunting. And you told me, you said, Greg, it's going to be a challenge to get that many heads in before the end of season. And luckily we did. We got a little bit of deer season at the end where we could, where we get back to baiting and kind of get those newer hunters and younger hunters out there so that they can see deer and have a better ethical shot at a steel animal that's not moving. So, you know, I'm kind of glad we got that. Timing was a little difficult, but, you know, it worked through it and everybody did a good job. So after that, later on in the year on the eastern side of the parish, was it Tensaw Parish, I believe?
Tensaw, yeah.
Yeah, we actually had a case, didn't we?
Yes, we did. We had our first detection in Louisiana. It was an 8.5-year-old buck that was actually showing symptoms of the disease. So that animal was tested, and unfortunately, it did test positive. Those tests were actually duplicated at LSU to ensure that it indeed was positive. A sample was sent afterwards to the National Veterinary Services Laboratory in Ames, Iowa, and they also confirmed that the deer was positive for chronic wasting disease. So with that, that triggered some changes, first being a declaration of emergency that prohibited the use of bait, as well as some export restrictions on certain parts of deer carcasses. And that is still in place today. Unfortunately, that first positive here in Louisiana is also connected to some positives that are just east of the Mississippi River in Mississippi. So in this case, we recognize that, you know, the disease is present on the landscape along the river. It's just that this was the first time it was detected on our side, but it is not an isolated event. So, you know, we fully expect that there were other positives out there that we just have not detected them. Some good news, though, for Tensaw Parish is the fact that since 2018, when the first detection was found on the Mississippi side of the river, we've increased surveillance significantly. And since that time, you know, in Tensaw Parish alone, we've collected more than 500 deer and tested them for the disease, all of which tested, you know, the disease was not detected in those samples, with the exception of that symptomatic animal right at the end of the 21-22 season. So it appears at the very least that the disease is difficult to detect, and in our opinion, it would be at a very low prevalence based on the number of samples already obtained without any additional positives. So that, in turn, does allow us to consider some mitigation practices that could hopefully keep that disease at a very low prevalence rate in the future. And you know, those are some of the tougher things, because when you first find something and it's an early detection, we start talking about mitigation. Obviously, you know, there's going to be some concern about taking steps such as preventing or prohibiting the use of bait when most animals are not positive. In general, you know, most properties will not have a positive animal on them. So it is actually very difficult at that time to convince, you know, hunters or landowners that being proactive at that time would be beneficial, simply because if you're trying to prevent the growth and spread of a disease, when you catch it early, that is the time to you know, to seek treatment or to apply mitigation practices in the case of what we're doing in Tensaw Parish. But, you know, and the hope and objective there is to just keep it at a very low prevalence, that it is also, that it remains very difficult to detect. You know, the baiting ban, you know, if we were finding it in 1 out of 3 animals, as I'd mentioned earlier, it's not going to really be effective at all, simply because of the sheer number of positive animals. You know, a deer walking around, every third deer that it would come in contact with would be positive. At that point, there's just so much danger and it's everywhere that your likelihood of being exposed is very high. And again, knowing what we know about environmental contamination, that environmental contamination would be so great that even with the removal of those positive animals, there's enough environmental contamination to reinfect. And that's one of the things with this disease. You never really know where the animal was infected. But in captive situations, they have actually depopulated captive herds and restocked research animals on those same facilities from areas in which the disease had not been found. And even a couple of years after those areas were idle, when deer were placed back in there, it was a short period of time before positives reemerged, and the majority of those herds became positive again. So environmental contamination is something very real, and it's a proven method of transmission. So with that, you know, if we can keep those prevalence rates extremely low to where it is almost a non-factor, that'll go a long ways to slowing the spread of the disease. And that's kind of the double-edged sword of the disease. Once you reach a certain threshold of positives, granted, there's some not great, you know, there's not a great confidence in what that percentage would be. But for the most part, it's accepted that once it reaches about a third of the population, the amount of environmental contamination at that time poses an equal risk of new infections as positive animals. So, you know, once you're at that threshold, then that disease can just grow exponentially because you're transmitting it equally through both positive animals and the environment. And, you know, at this point, with only one positive, there's little to no environmental contamination. So that's a great thing. And hopefully that animal is an outlier. Maybe maybe we will not find another positive in the next few seasons, and that would be great. We'd rather, get beat up over the fact that we put a baiting ban or recommended a baiting ban, but no additional positives were found, than not doing anything and coming back 5 or 10 years to these areas and seeing a high percentage of positive animals to the point of people are having difficulty seeing older, mature bucks, which is, you know, some of the desires of the hunters, especially in that part of our state. So, you know, that would be best case is, you know, we've done this, we've made some mitigation efforts, and we're just not able to detect additional positives. And if that's the worst thing that happens, and that would actually be great for the resource and certainly for the hunters and landowners in that part of Louisiana in the long run.
Yeah, I got to tell you, man, it was a double-edged sword for me. As a dad, I was just, ugh, because I mean, my girls, you know, right after Thanksgiving, we have a major dance recital the first part of December, and then they're free. You know, I can take them hunting. And then we get this baiting ban. I'm like, oh my gosh. And those daughters of mine, they're still, you know, younger, and they're not going. I could get on deer, but I mean, you'd have to tromp through backwater and walk, decent ways. And I could get on them, but those little ladies, they're not going to want to do that. So I was kind of fuzzed up a little bit about that. Yeah, my feelings hurt, as well as other people. But then the conservationist kicks in, and you're like, okay, we need to pull back. We need to stop just so that we can make sure exactly what we've got before we proceed forward. And is that's basically, you know, the state's mindset and behind the baiting ban that was put forward, wasn't it? Yeah.
Right. And so in Union and Morehouse, that has actually been rescinded. So you would be able to bait again. And the difference in that particular case is there's no detections in Louisiana. So that we're still dealing with only one positive animal in Arkansas, and no positives in Louisiana. So that's a great thing, and we'll continue with surveillance efforts in the near future, you know, in the years to come, to remain confident that if the disease is there, that we would be able to detect it.
Now, this is the whole reason why I wanted to get you on here. There's something coming up. It's coming up. What is it? May 28th, I think it is.
Yes, there's actually a couple of meetings that we're going to have just for public information purposes. One will be in Winnsboro on May 27th, and the other will be held in St. Joe on May 28th. Both are at the LSU Ag Extension buildings in those parishes. So just outside of Winnsboro, that facility, and then the LSU Ag facility in St. Joe. So the Winnsboro meeting is at 6 p.m., and the St. Joe meeting, which will be actually on a Saturday, will be at 10 a.m. That is certainly going to be a pretty busy weekend with Memorial Day. But when those dates were initially released, it was based on a framework that we have to follow after a notice is published in the state register that requires us to hold public meetings 35 to 40 days after that posting. However, these meetings really are for informational purposes, so we would have a little flexibility. But now that they have been released and those venues have been secured and folks have it marked on their calendars, we're going to obviously stick with those dates.
Now, talk to me about what's going to be discussed, because, and this is what hunters need to understand. This is what happens through these meetings. Correct me if I'm wrong. If CWD is detected in other parts of the state, what happens from these meetings will also be implemented there at that time. Is that correct?
Yeah, it does. What's happening here is we're setting rules for what we call a control area. So control area consists of two parts, the infectious area, which is the area in which you found the disease, and then the buffer area, which is the area immediately adjacent to it. So in this case, we're using parish boundaries, so it includes those three particular parishes, but that rule is not specific necessarily to those three parishes as it's specific to a control area. So if a new detection is found in a new part of the state, then that area would become a second control area, or potentially if it was adjacent to the current control area may grow in size by parish. So, these regulations that are proposed are through commission action. So there'll be a Louisiana Life and Fisheries Commission rules and reg, which are most of our hunting regs as they pertain to deer. And this will be no different. So it'll be a regulation that'll stipulate what you can and can't do within a CWD control area. In this case, we're saying that folks would not be able to bait, nor would they be able to move certain high-risk parts out of those control areas. So the meetings are really intended just to provide some information about the disease, how it's transmitted, some of the basics that we know about the disease that we feel, every hunter should know, or, we would like to share with them. In addition to that, we're going to cover the actual proposal of the regulation and provide an opportunity for folks to ask questions or provide comment.
Now, one question that I have, so baiting is banned in those areas right now. How long is that going to be for? Do we have a set time?
There's no set time. It's really for the, it's into the future. And it'll be dependent on what we find moving forward. So obviously if there are more positives found, then that recommendation or would stay in place in it for sure. And, moving forward. So, there is no timetable outside of the fact that, it is fluid and subject to change depending on what is detected in the years to come. But, hunters should fully expect this to be something in place, for the next few years at the very least, unless there's something major that changes in our surveillance.
Now, we're the 29th state now to have chronic wasting disease detected. Is that correct?
Correct.
How many of those 29 have a baiting ban in place because of chronic wasting disease?
That's a great question. Most states that have detected the disease do have a baiting and feeding ban in place. There are very few exceptions. Most states at the very least start with a baiting ban, and over time some of those have changed, not necessarily the recommendation of the agencies as much as just the will of hunters to change some of those policies. But in general, almost all states that have detected the disease implement this as a best management practice. And it's also a practice that has that's part of the it's adopted by fish and wildlife groups across the across the country. So whether it's the American Association of Fish and Wildlife Service Agencies or the Southeastern Association of Fish and Wildlife Service Agencies, which we're a member of, all of those have adopted baiting prohibitions as part of their best management practices with CWD. So, it's something supported both at the state and federal level across the country. But, there's still a few exceptions. There are a few states that still do allow baiting in areas where the disease has been found. But again, many of those policy changes really aren't driven by those wildlife agencies as much as, they're just driven by, the demands and desires of hunters who want to utilize bait, even in the presence of a disease like CWD.
Yeah, I was listening to a podcast with Ronnie Strickland, Cuss Strickland with Mossy Oak, and he had a guy on there last, I think it was last week, week before last, and they were talking about chronic wasting disease. There's some federal money that's about to be turned loose to the states to help with a study of chronic wasting disease, and that'll help you guys out a lot, won't it?
Yeah, that would. I mean, currently right now for most states, CWD, actually the detection of it is almost crippling to a wildlife agency from many standpoints. There is basically no federal money tied to it. It's just another item that you have to be able to, you have to be able to provide funding for within your agency. So it takes money away from other things, and it also takes staff. That would be managing a wide range of species or conducting a wide range of research, and it ties their time up with trying to manage the disease or increase surveillance. And the other big hit on state agencies is almost all state agencies generate their revenue through license sales, and they also receive Pittman-Robertson funds, which are funds on excise taxes on guns and ammunition. But part of the formula that sends that money back to states is based on the number of license holders you have. So when you have diseases such as chronic wasting disease that are 100% fatal and do threaten the long-term, health and productivity of deer, you have the potential to, cause that resource to decline in time. And it could also turn hunters away from hunting them. We haven't seen a lot of that yet because most states are still so early in the game as far as detection and where there are positives in their state. But certainly the potential is there, for it to reach levels at which you have population level decline, even in the absence of hunting. A state like Louisiana, where 70% of hunting efforts are expended towards deer, and every other species you could think of and name on the top of your head basically constitutes the other 30%. So obviously anything that would threaten deer in the long term, would have the potential to greatly impact our ability to generate revenue for our agency. So it has the potential to hit us on both sides. Certainly the hit to revenue that's generated and because of the disease and what it can morph into, but also the immediate impacts of the cost of increased testing and surveillance, hours and time spent towards that one effort instead of expending it towards a multitude of species and programs. So it is a drain, and there is no money tied to it. It's basically something that once your state detects it, the amount of both time and money that you'll have to expend in providing, testing for the public and monitoring of the disease, it increases, drastically after a positive detection. And we're starting to experience that now.
So now we've talked about the disease itself. We've talked about the implemented or what's going to be implemented from the feeding ban and try to mitigate what's happening. So let's say I go out, I shoot a deer. I don't think anything of it, but it has CWD. Will that affect me at all?
Right now, there's no link between CWD and human illness, so that's a good thing. So right now, there is nothing that shows that there is a link between human neurologic disease and chronic wasting disease. So that is a great thing. However, it is recommended that if you do test a deer and it does test positive for the disease, that you should not consume it. So that recommendation is coming from health officials, which include the CDC, who basically state that known positive animals should not be consumed. And they go a little further in the fact that if you're hunting an area where CWD is found, that you should at least consider testing your deer before consuming it. So those are basically the two messages that are out there. But to answer your original question, there actually is no link between human sickness and CWD.
Okay, so you know, Arkansas, I told you they had drop boxes. Louisiana going to make it a little easier to start getting these deer tested? Have you guys thought about drop boxes with freezers that we can drop a deer off and have them tested and hopefully kind of get that out there?
Yes, we're actually going to have some drop off coolers this year. It's only going to be in the parishes of Madison, Tensaw, and Franklin, which is the CWD control area. So in those three parishes, there will be drop-off coolers, and it's really just a starting point. So we're going to see how much use we receive of those, how well it works, and based on what we observe and see, you know, certainly, you know, we would look to expand that into other parishes, but for 2022, the plan, at least at this time, is to have drop-off coolers in place in those three parishes. Outside of that, hunters can reach out to our agency, any of the regional offices, and get instructions on how to have their deer tested. We also have numerous taxidermists and processors across the state working and assisting us in obtaining samples where hunters actually give permission to have their deer tested. And in some cases, it's not giving permission. In some cases, you know, hunters are actually requesting to have their deer tested. But those are basically the methods right now. So processors and taxidermists that are participating, as well as any Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries regional office can assist. And in those parishes I mentioned, Madison, Franklin, and Tensaw, there will be some drop-off containers that hunters will be able to take advantage of to have their deer tested. So they'll simply leave the head behind in a bag with a card with information. And from that, we'll be able to extract the necessary samples and have those resulted. The hunters will then be able to go on our website and check their results simply by looking at the ID number that is on the receipt that they kept. So no names will be listed. However, that unique identifier on each card that is submitted will be their way of checking their own result. So those are things that are actually in place now as far as the cards and the system. However, we're going to extend it to drop-off coolers in the 2022 season.
Years ago, and I'm talking probably 30 years ago, my grandfather had a deer in this one little section of woods that he called his pet. And, I mean, John, you could literally walk up within about 30 yards of this doe, and she'd just stand there and look at you. You know, knowing what I know now and you know, kind of being a little leery, would that deer have the characteristics of possible CWD, or what are the characteristics that hunters should look for, not only when they see a deer, but when they shoot one, they walk up on it? Is there anything we can look at, you know, characteristic-wise, and be like, hey, you know what? I may want to get this one tested.
Yes, there certainly are. And some of the, you know, obviously just abnormal behavior of the animal. The animal's not attentive. It's loss of fear of people. It can be easily approached, and it's not even aware that you are there. You know, certainly that is one of the red flags when it comes to CWD. Of course, you know, excessive salivation, you know, excessive urination, deer that is very thin, you know, those are all signs too. However, you know, those signs are also common for many other diseases. that affect deer that are not 100% fatal, and you know, and deer can actually recover from. So, but the biggest is just a neurologic behavior, that loss of its awareness and surrounding. That deer may just be standing out in an opening where a deer would never stand, and it's been standing there for hours. And once you approach it, the deer does not even react to your presence. And you know, certainly those would be deer that should be reported, because those would be prime suspects for chronic wasting disease.
Well, you've given us a lot of good information, and I appreciate it. Like I say, it's a hot topic. It needs to be a hot topic. You know, if the hunters in Louisiana aren't paying attention this summer to what's going on in the state CWD-wise, then you're crazy. And don't think, well, that's happening on the in an area that I don't hunt. Well, trust me, because when it happens in your area, when you get a case in your area, whatever's going on, whatever happens because of what we found now is going to be implemented. It's going to affect everybody. So everybody needs to be educated on it, knowledgeable, know what you're dealing with, know what you're looking at. And Jonathan just gave us a lot of information that we can use. Man, I appreciate your time, buddy.
Sure. Thank you. Thanks again, Greg.
Yes, sir. We'll talk to you later on. So there you have it. Some good information from Jonathan on chronic wasting disease. You guys got to pay attention to what's going to happen at this town hall meeting May 28th, man, because if you catch CWD in your area, trust me, whatever they're doing there, they're going to do at your place. So this just does not affect the east side of the state, guys. This could affect everybody. We all have to be paying attention. So good stuff. Glad that he came on. Glad you guys listened. Look, go check out the Facebook page, Antlers and Hicks on Facebook. We got some cool merchandise, hats. I haven't even posted my shirts, man. I got some slick looking shirts. Check them out, man. Buy one, represent the brand. Hope you guys like it. Gonna get with some good old boys on the and another podcast pretty soon. We're going to talk chronic wasting disease from a good old boy standpoint. What we think, what we're doing, what we're planning for. This isn't something that's going to come and go. This pretty well is here to stay. Now, we're the 29th state. Get it? We're the next up to see how we're going to handle it. So, holla at you next time. Thank you for listening.